Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We're not video streaming tonight, so you can just eat your heart out, huh? It is 7 past the hour. Boy, it's fun watching the crazy right just going berserk over the ruling by the Republican Bush-appointed judge in California who said that Prop 8 in California violated the constitutional protection of equal protection under the law, yada, yada, yada. Everybody from Rick Santorum to, the one that likes to carry around pocket fetuses with him, all the way to Newt Gingrich, who honestly believes that more than 60 or 70 people would vote for him if he ever decided to run for president. Oh, my God. I don't know. And Gingrich's sister is gay. It's just amazing to me, isn't it to you, how obscene the Republicans can be when they really, really put their minds to it. What a bunch of piglets. I don't know. The head of Target CEO Greg Steinhafel, apologized today about a political donation that Target Corporation made. And it went to, they made it to a business group backing a homophobic, freaky, conservative Republican who's running for Minnesota governor. When the contribution became public, of course, some employees and a lot of consumers just said, yo, no, you don't. Well, Target CEO Greg Steinhafel wrote employees to say the discount retailer was, quote, genuinely sorry, end quote, over the way the $150,000 contribution to Minnesota Forward donation played out. Mr. Steinhafel said Target would set up a review process for future political donations. Well, I'll tell you what, Greg, I appreciate your mea culpa, but what in the hell are you making political contributions to your corporation to begin with? Aren't you in the business of selling junk? Can't you just go ahead and sell your junk? God knows Americans will come in and buy your junk. I buy your junk. I buy your dishwasher detergent. I buy your bathroom tissue. I buy your Kleenex. What the hell are you doing supporting political candidates, your corporation? Tell you what, Greg, if you want to support a monkey for office, well, I guess that's been done, hasn't it? If you want to support a monkey for office, go ahead. I don't give a tinker's damn who you support. But the Target Corporation, you come out today and apologize because this freak who wound up getting Target Corporation's money, where does the money come from, Greg? It comes from chumps like me who buy your junk. Man, you're going to set up a review process for future... I've got a review process for you. One word. Don't! Minnesota Forward is running TV ads supporting Tom Emmer. A teabag type opposed to same-sex marriage and other gay rights initiatives that have come before Minnesota's legislature. So, Target sticks its ass into the middle of this? How dare you, Greg Steinhafel? What do you expect now? All of us gay simps are just going to pack our tent and go home? Well, we fixed him, didn't we? We got him to apologize. Woohoo! tell you what, Greg, next time I find out you make a political contribution to your corporation, makes a political contribution to anybody, will be the last time I buy your junk. All right? How's that? He issued a statement that said, "Well, I firmly believe that a business climate conducive to growth is critical to our future. I realize our decision affected many of you in a way I did not anticipate, and for that I'm genuinely sorry." End quote. What a jackass. You mean this guy didn't think that contributing $150,000 of corporate profits that come from, oh, I don't know, black, white, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight people who go buy his junk, he didn't think that would piss us off? What do you use for brains, Greg? Corn cobs? What the hell is wrong with you? He added, "The diversity of our team is an important aspect of our unique culture, little ba-ba, and our success, ba-bam-bam, as a company. And we did not hoopita-hoopita mean to disappoint you, woohoo, our team, or our valued guests." I'm not your goddamn guest. Excuse me. I'm a customer. I come in and buy your junk. Guest? Well, if I'm your guest, you just gave me the guest bedroom, and I pulled the covers back, and there was a big pile of steaming dog crap in the middle. What is wrong with you people? Guests. Target is known in Minnesota for helping sponsor the annual Twin Cities Gay Pride Festival. Really? Well, then, I mean, is your company really that schizophrenic, Greg? Stay out of politics, you half-wit. Keep your corporation out of it. I don't care who you contribute to. I know who you'd contribute to. Any right-wing geek who will say, well, let's work something out here so Target never pays any corporate taxes. All right, next target, according to public campaign reports, other contributors to Minnesota Forward include Red Wing Shoe Company, Best Buy, Pent Air, Hubbard Broadcasting, oh, that sounds like a behemoth, Davisco Foods International, and Polaris Industries. What do they make, submarines?
We didn't mean to disappoint our valued guests.
Go to hell, Greg, and take your Target Junk Corporation with you, please, okay?
Oh, we're sorry. We didn't realize our money... You know, we support the queers when they have that big parade. We love that parade. I love that parade.
God, I hate these people. Okay, now I have to apologize, everybody. I used the GD word. Okay, it was in a fit of pique, or a peak of fit, or something. And we'll probably lose another 20 affiliates over that. Well, I didn't use the F word, so...
We will set up a review committee about who we contribute to next time.
I mean, the audacity of that statement. Although, why not? We live in a corporatist society. Why should I or you or anyone who still entertains even a shadow of a memory of what this country was founded on and how the framers warned us against corporations even back then? Why are we surprised that now, after the Supreme Court ruling, that Target has decided to stick its junk-selling ass right in the middle and start handing out hundreds of thousands of dollars to homophobes? Why, of course.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
And you talk that talk. You knocked me out.
21 past the hour.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
This is interesting. Joe Walsh, I'll give his whole name. His website is individualsforjustice.org. But Joe sent this in also. We're starting with a couple of emails here. I hope you will think that's a wonderful idea. Joe writes, a few days ago I attended a meeting or gathering of some good people who were trying to reestablish an old concept of trying to live in peace. The task was to visualize a place in the future that was at peace and what it would look like. Noble idea, but, and a big but here, it is not possible for an activist to see peace without also seeing the struggle to get there. There was this moment when, in our group that was asked to deal with justice, half the room got up and left. The conversation was dealing with the occupation of Palestine, and half of the peacemakers in the room wanted no part of this question. They wanted to see a place of peace, not destruction and chaos. They wanted to see a light at the end of the tunnel, not a light from a Black Hawk helicopter killing women and children. They needed to see what the facilitator promised would be a path to nirvana. This was a curious moment for me to watch. It reminded me of one reason why we have failed to stop the wars and occupations around the world. The word empire was not even mentioned in a meeting that wanted to look for peace. The fact that we were meeting in a church was not lost on me. How can you say the F word in a church without looking rude? Activists and peacemakers should consider not meeting in places that have a long history of violence to talk about nonviolence. You should meet in a place that enhances the open exchange of ideas. A Christian church is not a place for this. Too dogmatic, too much baggage. The people who came to ensure the real story of what is happening in Gaza and the Middle East got their say, and that was good. But the night for me was also sad. Here were good people trying to work for peace, being led and directed by people who are sure they have the answers, and always make me nervous. That always makes me nervous. The question for me remains, can activists and peacemakers make room for each other and work to bring about a more just and peaceful world? Maybe the first step would be to acknowledge the difference between the peacemaker and the activist. The activist is like the person who will go up that ladder to win the battle for the castle. The peacemaker is like the person who will conclude the negotiations for the end of hostilities. Both must be present, but are very different in what they do. The second step? I don't have a clue. Joe Walsh, individualsforjustice.org. Interesting, the reference to the bloody history of the of religion, the church, especially in light of what happened to the social workers who were captured in Afghanistan and executed. The bodies of whom were found over the weekend. Six Christian missionaries. They made no claim to being missionaries, but in fact, their identification was healthcare workers, medical workers, as they were. But they were taken, 10 of them, 6 are Americans and 4, I believe, were British. They were taken off the road on which they were traveling into a wooded area, robbed, and then summarily executed, one after the other. By a group of religionists. And Stephen Pizzo had something very quick to say about that, which I will share with you when we come back. but we're not ready to go anywhere. Not yet. I looked at the clock wrong. What Pizzo wrote is under the heading that the history of religion is riddled with bodies, murder, and death. You know, which is a theme, and I know that I really, really piss off a lot of people who listen to this program who like to consider themselves to be independent progressives or whatever, but still maintain a belief in a supernatural being and mostly the doctrines of Judaism or Christianity. And I know that it is, especially to the Christians, it's very irritating that I'm constantly harping on this. But I truly do believe, in the very bottom of my heart, that most of the world's murder and death and mayhem has had a religious underpinning to what caused it. I can't escape that. Now, somebody will send me an email that says, what about Stalin? He was an atheist. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
That we must tolerate the atheist and Jew. But Jesus is the man and our salvation. And every war we wage is in his name. We think his Bible should be taught in every nation. And we'll bomb anyone who doesn't feel the same. Welcome to Jesus' land, where we all love that neighbor if that neighbor's understand. We won't let too many Mexicans across the Rio Grande.
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. By the way, the judge, Judge Walker, who issued the ruling today, is a George Herbert Walker Bush appointee. He's a Republican. That ought to, and pretty much has libertarian leanings, according to what I've read, civil libertarian. Is my volume too high? On the stream. Okay. Am I blowing everybody's receivers out? I'm sorry. Someday we'll be like a real talk show and have real equipment. But until that day, we'll just have to make do. Is that better? Okay. George in Oregon writes, regarding Obama's, that poll about Obama's citizenship, George writes, Mike, that birth of announcement in Hawaii 49 years ago was planted by a secret cabal so Barack Obama could run for president. You see, he's the Antichrist, and the evil forces that planted the announcement knew what would happen. They read Revelation, and they understand it. Looks like 42% of the Republican population is either comprised of religio-crazies, or they believe what the religio-crazies in Fox television spew forth every day. Scary thought. Very scary. We have a non-moment with Bob coming up. I guess we'll do it at the bottom of the next hour. Bob Alexander, who used to write moments with Bob for this program, then gave it up because he realized that everything that needed to be said had been said. And then apparently he came to a counter-realization that that was not necessarily true. But since he had already declared that he was not going to do moments with Bob anymore, he's kind of stuck with a decision. But he still sends things, and we still read them. That's later. U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker wrote in his decision that Prop 8, quote, fails to advance any rational basis. I love that. In singling out gay men and lesbians for denial of a marriage license, fails to advance any rational basis. Well, yeah, and I'm glad the judge ruled, and I'm not trying to say, oh, well, of course, judge. I mean, he had to listen to the evidence. Somebody brought the lawsuit. The four folks who brought the lawsuit and said, no, we're not going to be second-class citizens. We will get married. We will have the right to form a marriage contract. If a Baptist church doesn't want to marry us, screw the Baptist church. We don't want to get married there. If a mosque or a temple doesn't want to marry us, screw the mosque and the temple. But you cannot deny us, under the Constitution of the United States, equal protection under the law. He also wrote, the judge wrote, plaintiffs challenge Prop 8 under the Due Process and Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Each challenge is independently meritorious, as Prop 8 both unconstitutionally burdens the exercise of the fundamental right to marry and creates an irrational classification on the basis of sexual orientation. Oh, I love it when he uses the term irrational or fails to advance any rational basis. Of course! People who are religious by definition are not rational. People who are rational by definition cannot be religious. And it's only religious crazy people who brought this this Prop 8 to the ballot anyway. And as I think it was Rachel that pointed out, look now for the right-wing vermin that has infested so much of our media to start talking about. What one of the comments that the judge said, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but what he said was the fact that 7 million Californians, or whatever the number was, voted to deny rights to people who want to form a contract and happen to be same gender. The fact that 7 million people voted that way is irrelevant. And as Rachel pointed out tonight, why do you think they call them rights? They are not determined by people going to the polls. You know, every time I hear one of these filthy right-wingers point out to moi, when I say we live in a democracy, no, we don't, we live in a republic. All right, you dumbasses, you're right. And part of living in a republic is the protection of the rights of the minority. That's what the minorities. That's what the 14th Amendment is all about. And yet they also now they being the right wing crazies, the religious nutballs, are going to challenge us and go for it, you freaks, go for it. The Human Rights Campaign, the nation's largest gay rights group, said this, quote, after hearing extensive evidence in support of marriage equality and essentially no defense of the discrimination wrought by Prop 8, Judge Walker reaches the same conclusion we've always known to be true. The Constitution's protections are for all Americans, woo, including lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Really? And decades ago, the Constitution was used to prove that even black folks were full citizens and had the same rights. Why are we so ignorant? Why? Why is there such a vein of absolute stupidity embedded in this country? Why? I don't get that. People come here from all over the world for our higher education. So it must be good. But how is it that we are educating or not educating our people to the extent that they don't understand that, in the first place, there is the religious freedom does not mean religious tyranny. That's what these crazy Christians and crazy Muslims and I guess some Jews are the same thing. Oh, well, the Bible says it doesn't matter what the Bible says. The Bible is a mythology. It's a book of superstitions and desert stories and magic. Every society has a Bible. Every religion has a Bible. It is meaningless to the extent that it should dictate whether or not two people of the same gender can form a marriage contract. Why is that so hard to understand? If you want to be a religious crazy, go be one. But why must you foist your craziness off on somebody else, you selfish bastard? If you want to make war in Afghanistan, pick up a weapon and go fight. But why do you vote for people who want to send somebody else's son or daughter there? You selfish bastard. So sick of right-wingers. Oh! Supporters said, back when this passed a couple of years ago, Prop 8 was approved by 52% of the people who got off their asses and went to vote. And that ballot measure followed the state Supreme Court's legalization of same-sex marriage 5 months earlier, when the state Supreme Court said, no, you can't do this. This is a contract. Supporters of this miscegenated piece of legislation, or not legislation, mob rule, supporters said that Prop 8 was necessary to safeguard traditional marriage and to encourage responsible childbearing. Oh, give me a break! What's the divorce rate in this country? Among heteros. Huh? What is it? One out of every two marriages fail. What about the kids? I know more messed up kids because of divorced heteros. And I also know some pretty solid, interesting, intelligent, well-brought-up children who are being raised by lesbians and gay men. This argument, it's necessary to safeguard traditional marriage. Look, why don't you religious freaks who want to safeguard traditional marriage, why don't you get off your asses and go ahead and try to safeguard it? Only sit down with heteros and do it. Oh, no? Can't do that? It would be infringing on the rights? Infringing on the rights? I just can't believe this. Every night I come in here and sit down to do this program, and I think, Jesus God, what kind of madness is wafting through the country tonight? We'll be back.
Is this just desire or truth?
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All right, another correction. Bob Alexander did not write what he sent me. It's written in his style, though. That's why I thought it was from him. But I got a desperate email that said, wait. No, I didn't write it. If there's one thing that Bob does not want is to be, has someone say, oh, well, he stole that from someone else because of something stupid I said. So Bob did not write this, but he sent it anyway. This is from killinghope.org. I think the author is B. Blum. Anyway, here's the first one. There's no business like show business. She played Mozart's Piano Concerto in D minor and accompanied the one and only Aretha Franklin, a gala benefit performance in Philadelphia, at the home of the Philadelphia Orchestra, before 8,000 people, and they loved it! How many of them knew that the pianist was a genuine, unindicted war criminal? Guilty of crimes against humanity, defender of torture, with much blood on her pianist hands, whose style and office for years could be characterized as hypocrisy, disinformation, and outright lying. But what do the audience care? This is America, home of the good guys! She was fighting against the bad guys! And we all know that the show must go on. So, let's hear it, folks. Let's have a real all-American hand. Let's hear it for our own darling virtuoso, Miss Condoleezza Rice! Yeah, I saw that in the paper the other day, a picture of Condoleezza sitting there with that very intense look on her face. And great big Aretha Franklin! Woo! I mean, big Aretha Franklin! Singing stuff. And there's this one. So, please tell me again, what's the war about? When facts are inconvenient, when international law, human rights, and history get in the way, when war crimes can't easily be justified or explained away, when logic doesn't help much, the current crop of American political leaders turns to what is now the old reliable 9/11. We have to fight in Afghanistan because somehow it's tied into what happened on September 11, 2001. Here's Vice President Joe Biden. Quote, "We know that it was from the space that joins Afghanistan and Pakistan that the attacks of 9/11 occurred." End quote. Here's Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina. "This is the place, Afghanistan, we were attacked from, 9/11. Representative Mike Pence, unquote. Representative Mike Pence, the third-ranking House Republican, asserted that the revelations in the WikiLeaks document did not change his view of the Afghan conflict, nor does he expect a shift in public opinion. Quote, "Back home in Indiana, people still remember where the attacks on 9/11 came from." End quote. Here's President Obama a year ago, quote, "But we must never forget, this is not a war of choice. This is a war of necessity. Those who attacked America on 9/11 are plotting to do it again. If left unchecked, the Taliban insurgency will mean an even larger safe haven from which Al-Qaeda would plot to kill more Americans," end quote. And here's the president 2 days after the release of the WikiLeaks documents referring to Afghanistan and Pakistan as, quote, "the region from which the 9/11 attacks were waged and other attacks against the United States and our friends and allies have been planned," end quote. Never mind that out of the tens of thousands of people the United States and its NATO front have killed in Afghanistan, not one has been identified as having had anything to do with the events of September 11, 2001. Never mind that the so-called plot to kill Americans in 2001 was devised in Germany and Spain and the United States than in Afghanistan. Why hasn't Washington bombed those countries? Indeed, what actually is needed to plot to buy airline tickets and take flying lessons in the United States? What is needed? A room with some chairs? What does an even larger safe haven mean? A larger room with more chairs? Perhaps a blackboard? Terrorists intent upon attacking the United States can meet almost anywhere, with Afghanistan probably being one of the worst places for them, given the American occupation. There are many people in Afghanistan and Pakistan, the ones still living, who deeply resent the U.S. presence there and the drones that fly overhead and drop bombs on their houses, their wedding parties, their funerals, their life. As in Iraq, the American war on terrorism in Afghanistan regularly, routinely, and conspicuously creates numerous new anti-American terrorists. The only war of necessity that draws the United States to Afghanistan is the need for protected oil and gas pipelines from the Caspian Sea area. The establishment of military bases in this country that is surrounded by the oil-rich Caspian Sea and Persian Gulf regions and making it easier to watch and pressure next-door Iran. What more could any respectable imperialist nation desire? Oh, did I mention that the military-industrial security intelligence complex and its shareholders will be further enriched? But the war against the Taliban can't be won, except perhaps by killing everyone in Afghanistan. The United States should negotiate the pipelines with the Taliban, as the Clinton administration tried to do without success, then get out. Declare victory, but get out. Barack Obama can surely deliver an eloquent victory speech. Indeed. Afghanistan. I wish we had leadership in this country. And frankly, I wouldn't care what the political party was. I wouldn't care if it was liberal or conservative or booger eaters. I don't care. Just leadership. Honest to God, real leadership. I don't care if it's in the Oval Office or in the Senate or in the House, but leadership. This country is rudderless. Nobody. Nobody. Is leading nobody. And when you have a leaderless country, when you have a political vacuum, guess what steps in? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. True Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome back. 7 past the hour, hour 2 of The Malloy Program tonight. And again, thanks to KUDO in Anchorage, Alaska. Excuse me, a station that now carries the entire 3 hours of this program every night. Thanks to Shannon Moore and Kelly Walters, who really pushed to get us on that station. And also thanks very much to the program director of KUDO, Kathy Phillips, who made the decision to carry the Malloy Show. Thanks, all three of you. We do appreciate it very, very much. From our For What It's Worth department, who used to say that? Paul Harvey, I think. Caroline Giuliani, daughter of former Mayor Rudy, was arrested today for shoplifting from an Upper East Side New York beauty store. Oh, my God. She's 20. She was allegedly caught stealing makeup from a Sephora store on 86th and Lexington Avenue around 2 p.m. According to the New York Post, when store managers discovered who she was, quote, several high-ranking officers were dispatched to the store, an unusual measure for a shoplifting charge, end quote. Oh, my. Oh, well. In addition to Barack Obama and Sachimo, Louis Armstrong, and who asked for the music? Jan. It's also Helen Thomas's birthday today. No cupcakes from Obama this year? for Helen Thomas? Helen Thomas is not dead. She just got... Helen Thomas. Yeah. Patricia in Oklahoma City writes, Mike, I believe the point is being missed. This is regarding the decision by the federal judge in California. It's not about gay marriage. It's not about constitutional rights. It's about taking away everyone's rights. Why? So that the religious right can take away all of women's rights, just as much as the abortion issue is not about the act of abortion. First, you must take away the right for a woman to have rights to her own body, and then you have all of her rights. So, of course, gays cannot have rights. Yeah, it is. It's religious fundamentalism of the worst kind, when women and people of color were nothing more than chattel. And the founders of, ultimately, of Christianity could have sex with his own daughters and impregnate them after his wife was turned into, get this, a pillar of salt! It happened! Sodom and Gomorrah! The Sodom! Sodom! And what was their sin? They weren't nice to people. No! They buggered each other! Really? I didn't read that. Oh, well. And Lot and his wife and two daughters said, holy Toledo, let's get out of here. Because, you know, the fire, God was extremely pissed off. Shroom, here comes the fire. So they made it. And then the two girls said, hey, guess what?
What?
Everybody's dead.
Yeah.
No, everybody's dead except us.
Yeah.
No, sis. Everybody's dead! Well, don't yell. You're going to scare the camels. No, you don't understand. We're going to have to go in and do it with the old man so we can get pregnant. Otherwise, the human race won't exist. Really?
Yeah.
With dad?
Yeah.
Oh, we have to. You got any wine?
Yes.
I've got lots of wine. Let's give it to dad. No, give it to me. Okay. And ultimately, down through the chain, comes the babe born in the manger in the... Yeah, read the Bible sometime. Read the Bible. About sodomy and mass death and murder and mayhem and bigotry and slaughter and hatred and... I've never seen redemption in the Bible. Never. And I have read the Bible. Oh, well. what else we got here? You're drifting, Malloy. Come on, don't drift. Oh, yeah. The press release from Tikkun magazine. Rabbi Michael Lerner. Excuse me. Tikkun is the largest circulation liberal Jewish magazine in the world. Michael Lerner said today in a press release from Tikkun magazine, quote, homosexuals were with us in Auschwitz and were persecuted along with Jews throughout Western societies for the past several thousand years. So we stand with them in the struggle for full acceptance and full legal equality, including marriage equality in the 21st century. He went on to say, the rights of homosexuals are supported by an overwhelming majority of the American Jewish community. Yeah, let me digress. Yeah, I think Rachel pointed out tonight, of 31 different referenda in this country on gay rights, 31 times it was turned down. What is it about gay folk that causes heteros to just... flee in terror. Oh, my God. Look. Quick, hide the children. A queer. Ah. What is that? What madness produces that? Look. Oh, my God. Hide the children. A Jew. Ah. Look. Hide the children. An Arab. And he might be a Muslim. Ah. Oh, my God. It's difficult living in this society, isn't it? Michael Lynn writes, the rights of homosexuals is supported by an overwhelming majority of the American Jewish community. Not the American community at large. No. That support is not only based on a memory of shared victimhood, but also on the core values of our own Jewish tradition. The Torah's command to, quote, love your neighbor, unquote, and, quote, love the other, end quote, are intrinsic to how most American Jews understand their Jewish obligations today. Well, okay, one question, Rabbi. I'm sorry, you knew this would come up. So, you know, in sending this press release to moi, you knew it would come up. How about loving on the Palestinians? Just a little bit. Just a little. Well, I know that Michael Lerner is not aligned with the Likudniks where it concerns the persecution and murder and denial of basic human rights to the Palestinians. I understand that. From Jim in Burlingame, California, who writes, Mike, I'm listening to the Tuesday night podcast, and you're reading of Mr. Frank's and Mr. Herbert's articles in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, respectively. Mike, with those two articles, you would have a perfect Democratic Party platform to run on and win more seats in Congress this November. The problem is that this bunch of Democrats couldn't care less. Do you really think they want to unite the unemployed or the low-wage population that probably numbers about 50 million? What would they promise them? Tax cuts? When was the last time you heard a Democrat even mention the minimum wage? No, it's all over, Mike. There was proposed language in the financial reform bill this summer to regulate derivatives, but Nancy Pelosi did what she does best and took them off the table. But Social Security and Medicare cuts are still on the table. See you on the breadline, Jim, in Burlingame, California. Well, we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Call me with his sweet face, but I'll tell you, my place is so good, sun, and this place is so good, dark. I do not feel the romance, I do not catch the spark.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Newsweek has a fairly blunt article on their website about what happened on last night's runoff elections in the Midwest. The article is titled, quote, "The Tea Party's Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Night. Moderates Rule a Series of High-Profile Primaries," end quote. Excuse me. We are having, all of us here in Georgia, are having a little bit of difficulty breathing because of heat indices of 105 to 115 and mucho pollution. When you have 5 million people and they all want to drive the expressways in Atlanta, you have a lot of people start dying. This is what, here's part of what Newsweek said. The weak tea trend continued last night in a series of marquee primary battles stretching from the upper to lower Midwest. In Michigan, did I say runoffs? I meant primaries. In Michigan, moderate Rick Snyder, a former Gateway executive who supports embryonic stem cell research and sought to attract Democratic crossover votes with ads featuring Bill Ford. In Michigan, Rick Snyder was competing against a flock of more conservative candidates, Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard, State Attorney General Mike Cox, and Representative Pete Hoekstra. He was competing against them for the GOP governor's nomination. In Missouri, Roy Blunt fought for Kit Bond's open U.S. Senate seat against State Senator Chuck Pergeson, an anti-tax, anti-government conservative who has worked hard to position himself as a true blue Tea Partier. And in Kansas, the two orthodox conservative congressmen, Todd Tyart and Jerry Moran, running to replace Sam Brownback, seem basically indistinguishable until Tyart started harping on some of Moran's more moderate votes and secured the endorsement of a lady named Sarah Palin as a result. Unfortunately, for the Tea Party, the so-called mainstream candidates, Moran, Blunt, and Snyder, swept Tuesday night's races. Palin's endorsement couldn't push Tyart past Moran. He was trailing by 20 points in the polls when she announced her support earlier this summer. Pergeson's strategy of pounding Blunt as the consummate Washington insider didn't pay off. Last night, he lost by almost 60 points. And Snyder's vow to reach across the aisle, a cardinal sin in the Tea Party Bible, actually paid off, landing him 11 points ahead of Hoekstra, his next closest opponent. The news wasn't much better for the Tea Party in a handful of House races. Social moderates, including Kansas's Kevin Yoder, won several high-profile contests over their far-right challengers. Well, maybe the teabaggers are just it's kind of like a scream from the asylum. When I was a kid in Toledo, Toledo State Hospital was out on the south side of Toledo. And when I got to be 16 and could drive a car, I would go with my friends. We would drive into the grounds of Toledo. I'm not proud of this. We would drive into the grounds of Toledo State Hospital. They had a ward for the criminally insane. And we would drive onto the grounds, usually in the late afternoon, early evening, because long about dusk or nightfall or 9 o'clock or whatever, there would be a gate across the one road that came in that would be locked. And we would drive in, park the car in the visitor section, and then we would stroll around the grounds, specifically to listen to the shrieks and howls and screams of the people inside. That's what we did. And we wouldn't mock them. We wouldn't go blah, 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 in response. We would just listen and then look at each other and go, good God, I wonder what that's about. That's what the Tea Partiers, the Tea Baggers, remind me of. Screeching and howling that we all can hear from inside the asylum. Now, this would be appropriate time to push the Shakespearean, quote, sound and fury signifying nothing. But I prefer to remember when I used to drive with my friends on the grounds of Toledo State Hospital and listen to the screams and the shrieks and the howls of people who were really being eaten alive by demons of their own manufacture, of course. That is what the teabaggers remind me of. Only they're loose. They're not in a dormitory or locked bungalows with bars on the windows. They're actually out there voting, but not very many of them.
from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is indeed 25 before the hour. Jack in Shreveport writes about, you know, the war of necessity that Obama keeps referring to and the right-wingers do. Regarding Afghanistan, Jack writes, the only war of necessity is apparently the one which the millionaires and billionaires are waging with us, the ones who are not they. What the necessity they have is a mystery to me. I can only speculate that it is an evil born of sociopathy, greed, fear, and cowardice. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I have yet to meet a right-winger, a teabagger, who has a thimble full of courage or compassion. You know who the lead proponent of that is? Is this freak on Fox, Glenn Beck. Has he killed himself yet? Not yet. Soon. Didn't he have a bunch of shows about compassion is bad, and any church or any congregation that talks about compassion for fellow human beings is communist or socialist or Nazi or something. You know, what a sick bastard. Well, I mean, truly, the man is just deranged. And truly, he has a massive following of mouth-breathing, salivating freaks. Yes, Glenn! I don't want to get into that. Every time I talk about that freak, I get diarrhea for 3 days afterwards. Tom and Joshua Tree writing about Idiocracy. Mike, thanks for your outrage over those percentages that Tweety Bird called America's Idiocracy. But the ever-present insanity of this idiocracy is that those same percentages hold up for the number of Americans who think Jesus is God, a God who was born from a virgin and walks on water, and that Moses parted the Red Sea, and that women are born from a man's rib, not a man from a woman's womb. It is also the same percentage that believes in the lies told them by Bush and Cheney that led to inhuman, unjust, and criminal war, and the same percentage that thinks the way to promote and ensure human freedom and happiness is to torture those we wish to, whether they are terrorists or not. It's the same percentage that thinks the quickest way to heaven is to destroy the planet by any means necessary, including pollution and using depleted uranium on the women and children of Iraq and Afghanistan. So my question is, why doesn't Chris Matthews, Tweety Bird, show his outrage over all that insanity every day? Outrage throughout his entire one-hour show that plays while tens and hundreds of innocent people are being butchered by our lunatic, idiotic, Christian-driven war culture. Why not? Because they are all insane, visionless, hateful, ignorant ghouls that only know how to make money by killing and robbing the good out of everything they can get their greedy, stupid hands on. That's why. They are all threatened by peace, all of them intimidated by beauty, and all of them brain-dead monsters of an unconscious, unlived, and wholly unloved existence. And they'll kill anybody and everybody who dares present the slightest scintilla of reason, thought, or compassion. Tom, don't hold back. You're right. He knows he's right. He doesn't need me to verify anything he says, nor do you, truth seeker. Anthony Weiner, I got to share this with you. Absolutely have to. We played his minute plus the other night when, excuse me, again, we're just having trouble breathing down here. His outrage against the punks and the thugs and the bastards in the Republican Party who refuse to vote for help, medical help, 9 years after the fact of the people that suffered at the World Trade Center attack. Anthony Weiner. Last week I got angry on the floor of the House. In this age of cable and YouTube, millions of people evidently saw the 1 minute plus clip. But there has been relatively little focus on why the substantive debate that sparked it matters. More broadly, while I appreciate the concerns over the future of civility in politics, I believe a little raw anger right now is justified. Democrats make a mistake by pretending there is a bipartisan spirit in Congress these days, and they would be better served by calling out Republican shams. The specifics of the debate last week should be an example of an issue beyond partisan dispute. The bill in question was created to help the thousands of citizens who went to ground zero after the September 11 attacks. These are Americans who wanted to help and who scientific studies now show are falling ill and dying in troubling numbers. After 9 years, the House had a chance to make this right by voting on a bill that would provide treatment, screening, and compensation to Americans who sacrificed their safety that day, as well as Lower Manhattan residents and others who have suffered injury from exposure to the dust and debris. Though it should have been a legislative slam dunk, the bill was defeated on a simple up or down vote, with only 12 Republicans voting in favor. Just 21 additional Republican votes would have been sufficient for passage. It was frustrating to hear Republicans say these people don't deserve more help because, as one Republican put it, people get killed all the time. Others called it another big entitlement program. Some said it was a giveaway to New York or complained that the bill would have been paid for by closing a tax loophole. We responded to each of these arguments over the summer in the hours of hearings and markups of the bill, and the answers are pretty simple. The truth is that this is a limited program with a cap because it is restricted to 9/11 responders and others directly affected by the toxic substances. As we all remember, the victims of Ground Zero just came, Ground Zero dust came from all over the nation. They weren't just New Yorkers. And frankly, I don't see what's wrong with trying to close a loophole that lets foreign multinational corporations avoid paying taxes on incomes that they've earned in the United States. There were also Republican objections that we put the bill on the suspension calendar, which is generally used for non-controversial legislation, as this measure should have been. This move meant that the bill required a two-thirds favorable vote for approval rather than a simple majority, but it also kept the bill from getting bogged down in debate and stuck with poison pill amendments. Still, what upset me most last week were comments voiced by Republicans who claimed to be supporters of the bill, yet who used their time on the House floor not to persuade skeptical Republican colleagues to vote yes, but to excoriate Democrats for using the suspension calendar. Although I had spoken earlier in the debate on Friday, I felt it was important that someone object to this effort to make the health of those at Ground Zero just another partisan issue. And I got angry. I didn't break decorum, but I did say what I was thinking and feeling. I love the House of Representatives and its rules, and I was careful to respect regular order, but I believe sometimes we mistakenly assume you can't follow those rules and also say what you think, forcefully, especially when this galling behavior has been on display for years now. This wasn't the first time obstructionism has come to us cloaked in procedure. Recall that after months of negotiations, Republicans voted unanimously against the health care reform bill, and then they complained about process. Similarly, in January, after Senate Republicans introduced a bill calling for a deficit commission, they refused to support the legislation when the president took them up on the idea. And of course, they used technical objections as an excuse. Instead of engaging in a real debate about how to address the challenges we face, Republicans have turned to obstruction, no matter the issue, and then cry foul after the fact. They claim to want an open legislative process with more consultation and debate, but the truth is they simply don't want to pass anything. Meanwhile, conservative television and talk radio programs are full of false anger intended to scare Americans. I think some genuine frustration at this misleading tactic is overdue. That's why I got mad last week. That's also why I'm going to fight for this bill when we come back in session in September. I'm still angry. Playing politics on important issues is never right. But on health care for 9/11 responders, it's an outrage. Anthony Weiner. This was in yesterday's New York Times. Well, Congressman Weiner, time for some outrage. You haven't listened to this program. I know you can't get it in New York. Even though 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we got the AIR award as the best talk show in New York. But you can't get it in New York. Not this show. But Anthony, or Congressman, I should say, we've never met. The outrage that you're showing has been on this program and several others like it for years. But you wouldn't know that. You just wouldn't know that. And that's okay. It's not your fault. Although you could tune into XM or Sirius or go online. I know. You're a busy man. All right. We have a break. And I'll come back and talk a little bit about the WikiLeaks, the reaction by some of these cowardly, filthy Republicans. And a weekly columnist for the Washington Post who... Well, we'll tell you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Speakers. It'll be our secret.
Ten before the hour. Kawai John writes regarding Anthony Weiner. He thinks Israel can do no wrong. I find myself rather ambivalent about his pompous tirades on the floor of the House. I mean, it sounds really good, really, really good, but is it just an act? I often wonder if there's some subject that I am too blind to see. Of course, that's called empathy, and the Bush crime family will destroy me because of it. I'm not sure what part of that means, John. My fault, not yours. We mentioned the other night, when we played the clip, Anthony Weiner is very single-minded where it concerns the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He pretty much parrots almost identically the Likud party line, as do a lot of American Jews who are in positions of political power. That's just the way it works. So if I or you or anyone wants to go single issue on the guy, then yeah, you dismiss Weiner as just being another anti-Palestinian warmonger. But if I or you or anybody can find shades of decency, if that's possible, I don't know, I have to check with my ethics advisors, but if decency is a matter of degrees, if there's such a thing as decentiness, like there is truthiness, then Weiner and a lot of members of Congress. Another Likudnik who follows the party line is Al Franken, who is now a senator. One of the reasons that when we were both at Air America, he would never allow the promos for my program on his program because my position on Israel-Palestine was diametrically opposed to his. And yet Al Franken will sponsor and pass good legislation, or work to pass it, good legislation. So if we want to be single issue, excuse me, and I think that's the mark of a political naif, even though I find myself guilty of that sometimes too, to be, okay, well, if he or she is wrong on that issue, to hell with him. That's one way to certainly to look at office holders, but it displays whether I do it or you do it or anybody does it, a non-sophistication where it concerns the political realm, that when you stop and think about it, might be kind of dangerous. I guess. So while it's very easy, if you believe in the humanity of Palestinians, it's very easy to condemn Wiener's position on that issue. But if you... And the thing is, we mentioned the other night, he's married to a woman, recently married. I think he's only been married a couple of months. I don't know if he had a previous marriage or not. He's a fairly young member of Congress. But he's married to a woman whose family are a Muslim, I think. Her parents are teachers in Saudi Arabia. Is that right? I think she is Indian, but of Muslim faith, I think. Something like that. So maybe Anthony Weiner will be educated. So, yeah, we know about Anthony Weiner. Absolutely. Jim writes, under the heading "Let It Be," this is also about the declaration that Prop 8 is unconstitutional. I really don't care about same-sex marriage one way or the other. But the idea that 24 old men, I think they call themselves apostles, in the basement of a tabernacle in Salt Lake City can take their time and money to change the law in California is too much for me. And these are the people who have had nearly 160 years to erect a monument at the site of the Mountain Meadow Massacre and haven't done a damn thing. Is the Mountain Meadow Massacre, is that when the followers of Joseph Smith were? No. Mormons were massacred? I don't know what it is. I'm sorry. I'm sure that there are three or four people right now who have already got the answer to this and going to send it to me. The Mountain Meadow Massacre. Isn't that where Mormons were butchered? I don't know. Whatever. All right, we have a break. When we come back, it'll be getting close to taking some calls. Not quite yet. Also want to talk about the situation in the Gulf. And how truth, actual genuine truth, scares the hell out of conservatives and Republicans. It really does. They would rather listen to the garbage that erupts from the mouths of pigs like Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these people. But actual truth makes Republicans flee into the nearest corner and hide. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome back to The Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. And again, lots of thanks to KUDO in Anchorage, Alaska, that is now carrying this program. Thanks to Kelly and Kathy, the program director, and Shannon, all three of whom were gracious enough, Kelly and Shannon, to push for this program to be on every day, every night, and Kelly to make the final decision. We're proud to be in Alaska. This is from Bruce in California regarding the single-issue voting that I mentioned. Mike, I'm a single-issue voter and proud of it, and I think there's method in my madness as opposed to madness in my method. I found that the issue of choice and a woman's right to privacy is the one issue that I refuse to compromise on, even though I'm in late middle age and I'm beyond the point of being personally affected by it. My reason is simple. That one issue defines a mindset. Those who oppose choice believe it's government's responsibility to protect us from ourselves. They take the position that they know better than everyone else. They are prone to moralize about everything except their own conduct and seem to oppose freedom and equality at every turn. Say what you will about single-issue voting, but I will never vote anti-choice. Bruce in California. Okay, the intent of what I said is not to promote someone voting anti-choice at all. And the word choice is kind of misleading, although you did mention the right word, anti-privacy. I hate the fact that the people who advocate for a woman's right to privacy have chosen to use the word choice. That's a meme that has gotten in the language that'll never get out. And that meme provided all the bumper stickers that say, you know, a fetus is not a choice, it's a human being, and so on and so forth. It's an issue of privacy, and it has to do with an attempt to dominate women or deny women, everything. So I get your point, Bruce. I really do. And I don't mean to say that voting that particular issue one way or the other, you're right, it does define a mindset. But I think that with a little bit of education, maybe not, younger candidates for office can be convinced that the issue is not about choice, it's about privacy. I don't know, I may be wrong. I also would never vote for someone who advocates ending a woman's right to privacy. I simply wouldn't, even if he or she were absolutely right on all the other issues that concern me. In that instance, I would not necessarily, though, vote for the opponent. I simply just wouldn't vote for that candidate. If there are two candidates, a Democrat who is anti-privacy for women, and there are a lot of those in the South, a lot of those all over the country, and the other candidate is a Republican who is also anti-privacy, the choice is very simple for me. I just don't vote that particular election. But I get your point. Okay, a lot of people, Mountain Meadow Massacre. This is from Newton, and several of you have answered. It was the massacre by Mormons of a wagon train whose origin was Northwest Arkansas. I pass their departure point every time I drive to or from town. Apparently, there were among the members of the group some participants from Missouri. These Missourians had spoken of being in the mob that killed Joseph Smith. The massacre was supposedly in retaliation for Smith's murder. There was an attempt by Mormons to blame the killing on a local Indian tribe, and some Mormons even dressed as Indians, but the massacre was pretty much the work of Mormons against innocent travelers. Thanks, Newton. And from Adam also wrote about that. Thanks, Adam. And a couple more people. Thank you. Who is this? I love to hunt. Okay, I love to hunt. Thank you, I love to hunt. Now, if you're an absolute fundamentalist Christian and somehow you hold your breath every night to listen to this program, you're probably not going to want to hear this. I mean, hold your nose every night to listen to this program because you hate my position on religion, especially Christianity, but you like the program. So tune out for just a minute. Gordon in Oklahoma City sent this to me. It's Christianity in 105 words. I mean, to me, it's right on. This could be said about so many religions, but it's about Christianity. Here it is. The belief that a walking, dead Jewish deity who was his own father, although he always existed, commits suicide by cop, although he didn't really die, in order to give himself permission not to send you to an eternal place of torture that he created for you, but instead to make you live forever if you symbolically eat his flesh, drink his blood, and telepathically promise him you accept him as your master so he can cleanse you of an evil force that is present in mankind because a rib woman and a mud man were convinced by a talking snake to eat from a magical tree. Signed, Anonymous. Gordon, Oklahoma, sent it to me. Yow. Truth scares conservatives and Republicans to death. Jason Sigger, writing at Crooks and Liars, talks about this guy, Mark Thiessen. He writes, he's a columnist, weekly columnist of the Washington Post. He writes on foreign and domestic policy. He wrote the other day, quote, "We need Obama to use the Cheney Bush national security tool chest to put a hit out on WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. It's the only responsible thing to do," end quote. This is in the Washington Post. He wants him murdered. And as Jason writes, Mark Thiessen is furious, simply furious that the Obama administration hasn't put Julian Assange on the top of the most wanted list. In his Washington Post op-ed, he calls for the full force of the federal government to stop Assange, a, quote, "clear and present danger to the national security of the United States," end quote, before he kills again. You see, Assange claims to be in possession. This is what Mark Thiessen writes. Assange claims to be in possession of 15,000 even more sensitive documents, which he is reportedly preparing to release. On Sunday, Defense Secretary Robert Gates told ABC News that Assange had a moral culpability for the harm he has caused. Well, the Obama administration has a moral responsibility to stop him from wreaking even more damage. Assange is a non-U.S. citizen operating outside the territory of the United States. This means the government has a wide range of options for dealing with him. It can employ not only law enforcement, but also intelligence and military assets to bring Assange to justice and put his criminal syndicate out of business. Arresting Assange would be a major blow to his organization, but taking him off the streets is not enough. We must also recover the documents he unlawfully possessed and disable the system he has built to illegally disseminate classified information. Brrr. Chalk this up to another screeching editorial by the community of people who still believe that there was nothing wrong with how the Cheney Bush administration ran the country's security infrastructure. Despite losing elections in 2006 and 2008, they still think that the only way to run the federal government is by unilaterally strong-arming other nations, eavesdropping on U.S. citizens, and rewriting the Constitution. But as much as Thiessen reveals himself to be a foaming-at-the-mouth lunatic, you have to wonder if there are any limits in place at the Washington Post for conservative pundits. Obviously, there are not. It is 21 past the hour. Yeah, the truth scares the bejesus out of Republicans or conservatives. They're a bunch of cowards to begin with, but the worst kind of coward. I mean, it's one thing to be afraid of everything. Republicans are afraid of everything. But it's something else to be a moral coward, and that's what Republicans or conservatives really are. Mark Thiessen, the guy who writes a weekly column for the Washington Post and advocates killing Julian Assange, is a visiting fellow, Wikipedia tells me, with Stanford University's Hoover Institution. That figures. He served as chief speechwriter to George W. Bush and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. And before that, he was the senior aide to Jesse Helms. So that speaks volumes. I don't know. The Washington Post is turning into a real sewer of right-wing madness. They still have some columnists who make sense. But here's another example. Representative Mike Rogers, a Republican of Michigan, wants to execute the soldier, Manning. What's his name? Oh, damn it. This young kid who he's very young, he says, when you think about any of the operations of a soldier in the field that's released could lead to their death, that's an act of treason. And an act of treason is a capital offense, and it should be, you have to stop this culture of disclosure. It's dangerous. Oh, my God. Mike Rogers, this was also at Crooks and Liars. Where were these people when Scooter Libby outed a CIA agent who was working under deep cover, whose outing resulted in the deaths of, well, we don't know, but we do know that there were scores of people that died. Where were these right-wing pissants when that occurred? You see, this is why all Republicans are liars and cowards, and you don't listen to anything they say, because the hypocrisy is thigh deep with these animals. Caroli, writing at Crooks and Liars, says, I have my own opinions about WikiLeaks' responsibility with regard to releasing names, but I don't have an argument with them releasing documents, nor do I believe it's an act of treason, nor do I believe anyone should be executed as a result, including Afghans working with the U.S. government. But this man, Mike Rogers, was just granted another term without any effort. Lance Enderle did not receive enough votes to get onto the November ballot as the Democratic candidate, leaving the ghostwriter as the non-resident Democrat running for office in that congressional district. Of course this guy's going to get reelected. Of course. You know, that's such a knee-jerk, well, I think I ought to be executed. Yeah, by God, me too. What was leaked? Well, I don't know, but it was very bad stuff.
How do you know that?
Because Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity told me it was very bad stuff. And so did Sarah Palin on her Facebook.
Really? What was it that they said?
Well, there were names.
Of whom?
Names.
Of whom?
You being a smart ass, you're a liberal, aren't you?
You know how it works.
The only thing that was released, of course, none of these halfwits, these lunatics, have read anything that was released. Nothing. They don't have a clue as to what were in what was in the documents. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The only thing that was in the that was in the documents was the flow of information.
about the uselessness, the futility of what we're doing there, and the further slaughter of hundreds, thousands more Afghans and scores more American soldiers before we finally pull out. And we will pull out. And we will pull out in the same manner as every other attempt by any imperial country, nation, or any nation that sought imperialism, sought to become an imperial power, also pulled out. You do not go to Afghanistan unless you want to kill everybody there. The leadership of Afghanistan is a corrupt cabal of American corporate-sponsored thugs who couldn't care less about democracy or whatever the hell it's being called. They are there because we put them there, and they will remain as long as we allow them to remain. Same as with Saddam and so many other tin-horn, corrupt, filthy dictators. So, but to the Republicans or the conservatives, who a group that cannot differentiate between, I mean, they can't identify truth, and when they do identify it, even momentarily, they flee in terror. They just absolutely run their asses off to get away from the truth. And once they get away from the truth, they say, oh, treason! Execute him! Treason! Treason! Stupid jerks. Michael, who writes, hey, Mike, while listening to the Anthony Weiner's article about matters of healthcare for 9/11 responders, thought came to mind, will this also be the fate of those who now work on cleaning up the recent oil, the recent oil plum of a spill courtesy of BP? Those workers with inadequate safety gear who inevitably will fall ill just from the top toxic fumes covering the entire area. What about them? Entitlement programs. Why should that be such a politically dirty word? Is it so wrong if the 9/11 responders perhaps would feel a bit of entitlement in light of the heroic and essential service they have selflessly performed for their fellow Americans? How did entitlements anyway become such a horrible thing? Does that imply that nobody is entitled to anything in the United States? How long before life itself would be considered an entitlement program? The poisoning of words these right-wingers contribute to the debate is very revealing in regards to where they would like society to go. Some form of feudalism, perhaps, Michael. The word entitlements, that's usually code word. It's a very racist. It had its genesis in just blatant, flat-out white people racism. Entitlements, you see, are what black folks got. Hard-working white people never took entitlements. Oh, no. And don't you dare call Social Security and Medicare an entitlement. I paid for that, by God. No, the word entitlements has to do with, it's an old word that goes back to the Reagan years, back to the 80s. It has to do with welfare as it was doled out back in the day. Those were entitlements, you know, food stamps, aid to families with dependent children. Those were entitlements. You see, giving trillions to the weapons murder industry in this country, that's not an entitlement. That's patriotism, by God! That's something you left-wingers never understand. Jesus, I get tired of it. There was a...
There was a like a carnival hired a fair, one of these ratty little, you see them at shopping malls or at small town or country fairs, county fairs. You know what I'm talking about. They have a few rides, and then they have a midway that is designed to separate the rubes from their money. The church, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, in Roseto, PA, just outside Allentown, Our Lady of Mount Carmel. They have something called Our Lady of Mount Carmel Big Time Celebration. It's an annual fair that raises money for the Roman Catholic parish of Roseto. So this year, the guy who runs this, it's a Pennsylvania amusement company. Good Time Amusements is the name of it. It's run by a guy named Urban Good, hence the name Good Time Amusements. I get it. Anyway, he had a game on the midway where you shoot, okay? Or no, you throw darts. The game was dubbed Alien Attack, and it featured a large painted head image of a black man wearing a belt buckle with the presidential seal and holding a scroll labeled Health Bill. Players could win prizes like stuffed animals by hitting targets on the image's head and heart. Okay, you got it? This was at a Catholic church parish fundraiser. Our Lady of Mount Carmel, Big Time Celebration. So anyway, Catherine Chapman of Medford, Massachusetts, who spent part of her childhood in Roseto, was in town for a family reunion. And she saw the game, and she went to the manager, the owner of this traveling geek show, and complained. Miss Chapman said to the Associated Press, "What is the message you're sending kids that if your views don't agree with somebody else's, shoot them? I found it incredibly disrespectful and violent." And this was the president. It was absolutely appalling. The owner, Good, said, "Oops! It was just a big, big mistake in judgment, and I feel sorry about it. I can't take it back, but I can try to make it better. I'm sorry." Good went on to say that, "I voted for Obama. The game wasn't meant to encourage violence. You know, one of my staffers came up with the idea and painted it. I'm sorry. Good went on to say, "He just drew it up, and that's the way it came out. We didn't talk about it being political." Son of a bitch. You know, there's the image. A black guy wearing a belt buckle with a presidential seal and holding a scroll labeled Health Bill. Now, hit him with a dart in the head or the heart, right? "Oh, well, that's the way it came out. We didn't mean to make it political. We really didn't." Good went on to say, "I haven't been contacted by anyone in law enforcement." "We didn't mean anything political. One of my staffers drew it. It just came out like that."
A black man wearing a belt buckle with the presidential seal holding something called health care. And this piece of human dreck, this Mr. Good, Irwin Good, Irwin, whatever.
"We didn't mean anything political. I voted for Obama, you know."
You stinking liar. What do you suppose would have happened in central Pennsylvania? And we're living here in Allentown. What would have happened if it would have been a picture of Bush holding something called
Invade Iraq? Invade Iraq!
I swear to God, in the first place, the filth that run these midways, these little carnival midways, forget Julian Assange. These are the people that should be taken out and drawn and quartered, the way they screw the rubes.
Would you like a stuffed animal? Oh, good. Step right up. It's only, well, we're going to separate you and about 60 of your dollars. But look how easy it is. Look, see this? Pew, pew, pew. You just do that. See, I can do it. Now you do it. Ooh, you know, and 5 minutes later, when the poor Rube has just blown 50 bucks because the poor Rube wants to get his kid or his old lady a little stuffed thing, you know, a little animal, a little panda bear. You ever seen those people that work at the fairs? I know I'm going off on a tangent, but what's the one thing in common that they all have? They're crackheads. You ever seen any of them with teeth? I mean, oh my God. I'm sorry, not crack. Meth. You know, that's all those trailers that are parked around out and back. That's where they cook this stuff up. And you know it. You know it's true. Oh my God. These are people who are 32 years old and look like they're 80.
We found. Step right up here. Hit the black man. Oh, I'm sorry. Hit the target. Yeah, what?
Mm-hmm.
You ever notice them? No teeth. They're just rotted stumps. Or they've. Some of them go so far as to say, I can't take this anymore. Pull them all out. God damn it, I just can't do it. I'll just eat spaghetti the rest of my life. Pull them all out. Here's your baked beans. You ever notice that? If you work in a carnival and you listen to this program, kiss my grits. You know what I'm talking about, you bunch of damn meth freaks. You know what you are.
God, every time we go, and we go to those. We go to those here in Georgia. We go to those. And Molly will look at these people and she'll go, Daddy? I say, never mind, honey. Just go ride the slide or, you know, whatever.
Here I go get another funnel cake.
So this piece of waste, good, Irvin Good.
Well, it's one of my staffers made the picture. He wasn't trying to do anything. We didn't mean to be political. It's just, you know, the fact that it has a belt buckle with a seal of the President of the United States and he's holding health care. It doesn't mean anything. Wasn't supposed to be political. British Petroleum claimed a key milestone today in the effort to plug its blown-out well, as a government report said much of the spilled oil is gone. Heartening officials who have taken heat during the tricky cleanup, but leaving some Gulf Coast residents still skeptical. British Petroleum, PLC, reported that mud forced down the well overnight was pushing the crude back down to its source for the first time since the rig exploded off Louisiana on April 20th, killing 11 workers. And a federal report was released Wednesday indicated that only about a quarter of the oil spilled remains in the Gulf, with the rest having been contained, cleaned up, or otherwise disappeared. Why? It's a miracle. Oh, my God. 75% of the oil is... Well, there are no dead shrimp. There are no dead fish. The beaches are fine. What? It's just gone. Is it over there? Check up there. Is it over there?
Funny if what was the head of BP, Tony? How quickly we forget. What, Hayward? What if it turns out he was right when he
I mean, right, insofar as, well, the Gulf of Mexico is a big place. It's not going to be that big of a problem. Remember all that? Huh? What do you suppose has happened to the oil? Andre writes regarding the oil is gone. When I read this yesterday, my heart sank. Pure fiction. Why does not some reporter say we will go down in a submarine and see if the oil is on the bottom of the Gulf? Basic science, common sense. What about the history we had with the Exxon Valdez? Did the oil just go away with that disaster? You know, that's that question now. What if Tony Hayward was right? I actually heard somebody on one of the news shows, I think it was a network news show, say that today. Ooh, it just disappeared. Millions and millions of gallons that pumped into the ocean for, what, 100 days, 95 days, whatever. 25% evaporated, 24% dispersed, 26% still there, 25% recovered, burned, or skimmed. Ooh, praise Jesus then, right? Millions and millions. And I heard somebody also say today, well, we had the largest armada of ships trying to clean up the mess since D-Day. So, where's the oil? On the surface, it's all gone. Where are the dispersants? When do the sick people who are out there breathing this stuff with no protective gear, when do they show up? How many years were lopped off? Does this mean then that the shrimping industry can get back to work? I heard today, did I not, that the federal restrictions on areas of fishing have been lifted? Did I not see on one of the news shows tonight or today some reporter out with an oysterman, or maybe it was a shrimper, I don't know, I guess an oysterman, and they brought up some oysters, and the reporter said, well, there's no oil. Where's the oil? And the oysterman said, here, taste it. Look at it. No oil. Could it be? So what do you think, Truth Seeker? What happened to the oil? What happened to all the wetlands and the estuaries? Has that disappeared too? All those pictures we saw of oil-clotted reeds and the clear scientific statement of what was happening, that this oil, this stuff gets down, and they know this because this has happened in other parts of the world. Or is the Gulf of Mexico and the southern coast of the United States a magic place? It doesn't collect here. It does collect in Nigeria and Mexico and Indonesia and Vietnam and China, but not here. It's gone. Every place else, when they have a massive spill like this, eruption, spill, who's keeping track? It stays there, and people die, and fish die, and animals die, and clams go away, and shrimp go away, and beavers croak, but not here! No! And why not? Because we live in a magical place, except when the queers get to get married, then gosh darn it, it's not so magical anymore. It's just not magical. Where's Falwell's dead? Maybe, what's the other one, the 400 Club? Who's that? Pat Robertson. Maybe he can tell us. The 7, what did I say? The 500 Club, 400 Club. All right, whatever. The 7, maybe Pat Robertson will come on tomorrow and explain to his terminally brain-dead collection of zombies, well, it's because God has put the curtain back, a protection. you know, the curtain was lifted because of the queers, and that's why we had 9/11. But God, of course, God got fooled by that judge out there, that Republican judge. You don't fool God. I'll tell you what, Pat Robertson will say, it won't be long before California just slips into the ocean. Where's the oil? What happened to the oil? Somebody came in and stole it. Where's Cheney? Free oil. He probably said to Halliburton, free oil. Free oil. Free oil. No? You don't think so? Is he still alive? Shoom. 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 I would suggest to his daughter, another right-wing nutball, if one ever existed. Listen, make sure your dad has a backup generator when you take him home. Make sure there's a long extension cord, or don't let him too far from wherever you're going to connect him. Oh, boy, because if somebody pulls that plug out, shh. You know. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.